Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And I really would first of all like to thank the organisers for inviting me to this conference. I mean, it really is a great honour, and I'm very grateful. Even if I can't use this thing. Ah, can you read this, please? Well, this was written a long time ago, obviously, but it is an amazing link, amazing insight into the link between life and soil. Where you came from soil and you will become soil again. It's still, even now, not a bad description of nutrient cycling. And the same concept is present in the Buddhist and Quran philosophies. So it's really as old as civilization itself. And this, of course, is the world, planet Earth. Another name for Earth is soil. It's also called Mother Earth. So again, the link between life and soil is as old as civilization. I went to a conference many years ago in Reading University, and Herman Bondi gave these words, which really stimulated me. And I'd like you to remember them when I give this talk, because what I'm about to say, I'm by no means sure that I'm right, but with luck, it may stimulate others. Consider a gram of soil. There are millions and millions of bacteria, about the same number as the number of people who've ever lived on planet Earth. So we're looking at something very complicated. Very many different classes, groups, bacteria, fungi, nematodes. And the links, the phylogenetic tree, is incredibly complex. We don't understand it. To try and study the individual organisms in a gram of soil is an impossibility. And we can only grow a very small fraction of the total microbial biomass. In any culture medium, 1 or 2% are culturable. So this gives us real problems in trying to understand the role of the links between microbiology and organic matter dynamics. And because of this, Jenkinson developed the microbial biomass concept, where we can study the microorganisms as a single unit. And then things start to make a bit of sense. We can look at the transformations of carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus through the microorganisms and back to the simple inorganic components that plants can use again. Now, this was a real breakthrough. But it did pose some real fundamental questions that we still can't really answer. They showed when you bring a soil into the lab and incubate it, it will respire, it will mineralize soil organic carbon at a very constant rate for a very long time. If we fumigate the soil, there is initially a flush of carbon dioxide. Now, this extra carbon dioxide, of course, comes from the microorganisms that were killed by the fumigant and are mineralized by the small population which survives and develops. But then, remarkably, the rate of mineralization in the fumigated soil and the non-fumigated soil proceed at the same rate. And this was first noticed in 1966. And the remarkable thing is, of course, that in the non-fumigated soil, the biomass is very large. It has a very complex community structure. In the fumigated soil, the biomass is much smaller, a very much more simple community structure. Yet it's still able to mineralize humified soil organic matter, a very recalcitrant material, at the same rate as the large population. Now the question is, how? And this is something that's puzzled us for 50 years. So the recolonizing population which develops in the fumigated soil, smaller, less complex, much more biochemically limited, it can only use simple substrates compared to the large population. Yet, of all the natural materials in the world, soil organic matter is one of the most difficult to mineralize, yet it can still do it. So this is the paradox of soil organic matter mineralization. How can a small, simple microbial population mineralize humified soil organic matter at the same rate as the large population? And this is what I want to discuss with you today. Soil organic matter is not an easy material for enzyme activity. There is no humic acid molecule. It's a random condensation product of many different microbial metabolites, some aliphatic, some organic. But it's not an ideal substrate for enzymes, which much prefer regular bonds. Enzymes are very good at cleaving off, for example, down a cellulose fibril, glucose units, or amino acids from proteins. It's very energetically favorable. It's not energetically favorable for enzymes to mineralize soil organic matter, because there are so many different bonds. The active sites, it just doesn't fit, it just doesn't work. And also, if you think about it, if a bacteria pumps an enzyme into soil organic matter, for it to try and break off a component, first of all, the enzyme is a substrate for another organism. It's a rich, juicy carbon source. And secondly, another organism may well take the hydrolysis product of that enzyme. So soil organic matter is a difficult place to live. We did an experiment to try and understand what was happening, and this experiment has been done thousands of times. We took two soils, one arable, one grassland, treated them nil fumigation to kill the microorganisms, then removing the chloroform, then fumigation followed by inoculation with fresh soil to add a few organisms. And as expected, this is what happened. This is the mineralization of soil organic carbon in the non-fumigated soil. This is soil. First, here we have the flush caused by the decomposition of the fumigated biomass when it was killed. And then you can see that mineralization in the fumigated soil proceeds at roughly the same rate as that in the non-fumigated. And inoculation here had a small, possibly significant effect, but not very big. The grassland soil is more clear. Here is the non-fumigated soil. Then fumigation causes an increase in CO2 evolution. And then the rate of mineralization in the fumigated soil and that in the non-fumigated soil become parallel. They're both mineralizing at the same rate. And this is biomass carbon, the arable soil, a large population, fumigation. Most of the biomass is destroyed, and there is no, the biomass in the fumigated soil never recovers to the same extent as that in the non-fumigated soil. Grassland again, non-fumigated, a large population. The biomass in the fumigated soil remains small and never recovers to the same extent as this large population in the fumigated in the non-fumigated soil. Yet both populations are mineralizing soil organic carbon at the same rate. About 30% recovery, 20 to 30% recovery after 30 days. ATP, another excellent indicator of microbial biomass. In the fumigated soil, you can see at time naught, almost zero ATP. The population has been nearly completely destroyed. And even after 60 days, recovery of ATP is very small compared to that in the non-fumigated soil. The grassland shows the same. Inoculation having no effect over that of incubation. So two very different populations. Again, 20 to 30%. Of that in the non-fumigated soil. Phospholipids, which we all know, we can now use phospholipids to look at the community structure of the biomass. Different organisms have different signature PLFAs. We can use them as biomarkers. There was a very good correlation between PLFAs in our work and microbial biomass carbon, suggesting that both come from the same source, the living microorganisms. Phospholipids, biomarkers, gram-positive, gram-negative, and fungi, we know all this, that we can look at the community structure in some detail with PLFAs. And again, we went to this simple experiment, nil chloroform, remove the chloroform and incubate, chloroform plus inoculation with fresh soil. This looks a bit of a car crash. This is the principal components analysis of the PLFAs. But with principal components analysis, you can see some structure emerging. Arable unfumigated, arable fumigated inoculated, arable fumigated not inoculated. So three very different populations, each mineralizing humified soil organic matter at the same rate. Grassland, unfumigated, grassland fumigated inoculated, grassland fumigated not inoculated. Again, three very different PLFA's community structures, but each mineralizing soil organic carbon at the same rate. Okay. DGGE. This is a grassland soil, control, three replicates. It's very difficult to see from the audience, but there are thousands of bands, each one coming from a different group. Fumigation, there are many less bands, but the bands that are there, many of them are much more distinct. But you will agree, two very different populations of microorganisms. We think these strong bands are because fumigation has removed competition by killing some of the microorganisms. But at least the evidence is, in everywhere we look, we are dealing at two very different populations, both mineralizing a very, very difficult substrate indeed. So this again is the paradox. The fumigated and non-fumigated soils have genetically distinct populations. Both populations mineralize soil organic matter at the same rate. The question is how? Soil organic matter is really a large pool of potentially available substrate. We know the biomass only mineralizes it very, very slowly. So why is there not a feedback mechanism? Why does the biomass not produce more enzymes and so obtain more energy from soil organic matter and grow and produce more energy still? This is very common. We suggest the reason it doesn't is that it can't. Martin showed that if you add really quite resistant substrates, cellulose, wheat, roots, they degrade, mineralize very slowly in the fumigated soil. Yet they are much less resistant than soil organic matter itself. So if the biomass cannot mineralize cellulose, how can it mineralize soil organic matter when 90% of it is removed and killed? And again, this is the paradox. The rate of organic matter mineralization in the fumigated soil is equivalent to that in the non-fumigated soil. And to explain this, we are putting forward, very tentatively, remember Herman Bondi's wise words, the idea, the heresy, that soil organic matter mineralization is not under biological control. There is first a step through which organic matter must pass, which we call the regulatory gate. And then it becomes biologically available, and only then can the microorganisms mineralize it. So this explains why a large biomass and a small biomass both mineralize soil organic matter at the same rate. They cannot influence this step. So K1 is a non-biological process, K2 a biological one. Once it's gone through this gate, both the small biomass and the large biomass have available the same little pulse of substrate. We all know what this is, a bottle of tomato sauce, one of Britain's favourite dishes. With fish and chips, it's delicious. Now, however big this bottle, and however hard you squeeze it, what controls the rate is not the size of the bottle or how hard you go, woof. It's that little hole at the top. And the regulatory gate, we're suggesting, in the same way, with some, it's not quite the same, the regulatory gate is the bottleneck that regulates the flow. And then you can see here the bottleneck in this bottle. Now, what we are proposing is this. This is soil organic carbon. And this is then, through some process we don't know, being converted to biologically available carbon. And these are the microorganisms. And then this carbon, this pulse of carbon, is being mineralized and evolved as CO2. And after fumigation, most of the organisms are killed. But the same pulse of carbon is being released. So the smaller population is mineralizing the same pulse that the larger population is mineralizing. And that is our explanation, that both populations are looking at the same pool of carbon which is coming from the non-biologically available soil organic matter. And can we simulate the regulatory gate? We tried to destroy the biomass with repeated fumigation incubations. If we do this, this kills the microorganisms, and yet it leaves soil organic carbon unaffected. So we end up with a soil organic matter with no microorganisms. Are we off of time? Okay. Yeah. Oh, perfect. And this produces a biomass-free soil. And then we try to mobilize organic carbon under conditions without microbial activity. So we had two cycles, or rather two treatments, soil pre-treated with four cycles of 24 hours chloroform fumigation, and then 3 days aerobic incubation to decrease the microorganisms to a very, very tiny amount. And then we perfused the soil with chloroform-saturated water to stop microbial activity. Another treatment was intact soil perfused with water to try and mirror microbial activity. So we have soil organic carbon. And in nature, the biomass is a sink pulling off the carbon, and then it's lost as carbon dioxide. Here, we are leaching the soil organic carbon with chloroform, with a leaching sink, and then we're collecting the carbon as leachate, which we can then analyze. And this is the apparatus. The soil is put in here. Then very slowly, one drop at a time, the chloroform saturated water passes through at 100% water holding capacity and is collected here for analysis. Now, my soil physics friends tell me there are two models. If the carbon is all in a big available pool and you start to leach, after the initial start, you will end up with something like this, with the carbon coming down to zero concentration. If the carbon is being released slowly over a long period at a constant rate, you will approach something like this. So the data we have, and we don't have much of it, it's very difficult to obtain. This is the carbon in the soil perfused with water. There's very little because it's being mineralized. Here, after the initial flush, you can see the carbon being leached, really, if you're fair, I think, does come down to some sort of steady state, a slow continual release, rather analogous to mineralization. And another soil, after the initial removing the readily soluble carbon, the carbon that we are extracting comes down to some sort of steady and fairly constant rate of release. Again, similar to mineralization. We need to do more of this, and we are going to. So the first stage in humified soil organic matter mineralization, we suggest, is an abiological process independent of the size, biodiversity, or the structure of the microorganisms. And possible processes, you can read these, hydrolysis, oxidation. We don't know. We don't know what this mechanism is. GOK, God only knows. And this paper really was, I must give great credit to my colleague Sarah Kennett, who was the postdoc that did this work. But it did receive quite a, shall we say, robust reception. This is Kuziakov, and they really hammered it. But they were fair. And we were given the chance to answer them in soil biology and biochemistry. And then Patterson also made very critical comments on it. So we've invited Eric Patterson to join us in another grant to to look at this phenomenon further. And so we still do not understand the basic mechanisms of soil organic matter mineralization, one of the most important processes on this planet, after many decades. It's quite remarkable, really. And I'll leave you with a cartoon that you all know very much, but it's still one of my favorites. A leaf is about to start the very interesting process of mineralization. I'd acknowledge BBSRC, who pays for the work, and thank you all very much indeed. Yes. This is Shall I repeat it?
Yeah.
I think you're raising the question of dormancy or redundancy in the microbial population.
The surface area of the organic matter.
I don't quite get that one.
These are pretty huge molecules.
Yeah. If they are molecules.
I'm sorry?
If they are molecules. But I don't think a molecule is a discrete entity. I don't think. Yeah, something like that.
Okay. But they're like maybe, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands
of
daltons.
Yeah.
And so, like, the surface area that's exposed, you can have a very small microbial biomass which saturates the surface area, and the rest of the microbial biomass in non-fumigated soil is just dormant.
But why? Because if you add glucose or another substrate, it's off like a rocket.
Yeah.
You know, it's substrate limited. Why hasn't it evolved the ability? If a small fraction can mineralize soil organic matter, why hasn't a larger fraction evolved to mineralize more?
I don't get it.
That's what I don't get.
No, but I mean, the standing biomass is there because of the historical carbon supply, not because of the current carbon supply.
Yes and no. If you don't maintain a carbon input, the biomass declines. It falls. It can't exist. It cannot maintain its biomass just on humified soil organic carbon. If you incubate it in the lab, it declines really relatively, fairly quickly. Well, I think both of them get their carbon source actually through soil solution. I think I look at it as a huge, or I use the word molecule, little bits are breaking off and floating through the organic matter, because that explains then why both populations are looking at the same fraction. But I take your point. Yeah.
In your proposed additional long-term incubations, you in your graphs you show these rather low steady-state amounts of carbon that are remaining.
Yes.
That are being produced. Do you anticipate different steady-state concentrations with different types of soils?
Oh, absolutely.
Based on different management, based on different mineralogy. Can you talk about what you're planning to do in sort of investigating the variability
yes.
in that particular parameter?
Yeah, first of all, they're very difficult things to do because the machine doesn't like running for 60 days. It breaks down and the temperature goes up. So it's not brilliant data. I'd be the first one to say that. Mm-hmm. But we'd like to look at more soils. We'd also like to look at some C13 labeled soils and see if the atom percent abundance of the carbon that is coming off is the same as the CO2 being respired. Mm-hmm. If we could link those two, I really would start to believe it more. Because we really are putting forward a hypothesis, no more. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult to explain. I mean, the gentleman there had a good go. It's very difficult to explain how two very different populations can mineralize soil organic matter in the same extent. And Elder Paul's not here, I don't think, is he? No. But he years ago, he said they don't. And it created a great deal of interest in the whole subject. And I can hear Jeff. Yeah, you remember well. Yeah. And with respect to Elder, I think in this case he was wrong. And I think, fair enough, he opened up a whole new area anyway. But we'd like to do, that's what we'd like to do.
Were you looking at this at any of the maintenance energy requirements?
I haven't thought it.
How you're maintaining that higher population, the same amount of carbon that you're maintaining in a low?
Well, you're not, Jeff, really, because, again, if you incubate a soil, as you know, in the lab, without any extra substrate, the biomass will fall. And, in fact, Domsch, by adding little bits of glucose, tried to work out the maintenance energy requirements. But there's not enough energy in organic matter to support the entire population for very long.
Are you able to look at the composition of the carbon coming off in the leachate, meaning like trying to target the...
Yeah, we tried. We tried very hard. We did some NMR work, but it was awfully fuzzy. You need a better chemist than I am to... I think that would be a very good thing to do. I thought NMR would help, but you just get loads of peaks, and you think, well... Sorry, was that... Yes.
Yes.
That was a very good question. That was actually the argument of Kuziakov, who wrote a really good criticism of this work. But it's difficult to imagine a pool of extracellular enzymes released by fumigation lasting for 60 days. You would expect, I think, activity to fall as the enzymes became more denatured. It's a long time for an enzyme. Yeah.
Microbial body is much more easier to decompose than organic matter.
Yes, but they've been removed. They're removed in a few days. But, I mean, they're decomposed in a few days.
Okay, you use carbon labels and carbon...
Pardon?
Did you label the carbon for microbial?
Yes, it's been a huge amount of work has been done on this.
It's 4 days and it's gone?
Yeah. Well, this is the basis of the measuring biomass, this fumigation method. But this, in some ways, I think is more interesting than the biomass. Oh, sure, but you think about it in soil, which is a pretty mucky medium, and it's not sterile, and I don't believe they'd survive very long. They're, to another organism, they're not an enzyme. They're a carbon source, and, you know.
Okay, we can pick it up later. With
thanks
more
very
questions.
Much.
We're out of time, so thank you very much.